you have to have a multifaceted definition of junk and just start with thinking, what are all the obviously bad traits that content can have?
Yeah.
And then our approach to it was we created a separate AI filter for each one.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is fake data, AI, and how to deal with it. So much that we see on the internet is clickbait, fake news, and misinformation. And now some of this is being generated with generative AI. In 2017, more data was generated in that single year alone than the rest of the history of mankind's records. And that's probably increasing every year. But a lot of this is junk and doesn't serve us. I came across a very interesting platform, Otherweb. And so today, my guest is Alex Fink, who is the founder of Otherweb. And what Otherweb does is allows its users to read news and commentary, listen to podcasts, search the web, etc., without clickbait, paywalls, affiliate links, and all of the junk that we're seeing so much today. Welcome, Alex. I'm really interested to get into this.
Thanks. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Could you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up founding Otherweb?
Right. So my background is computer science. And for the previous 15 years before that, I was working mostly on perception systems, cameras, computer vision, that sort of thing. And at some point, it just dawned on me that the world doesn't need more cameras and that I'm helping generate more data when, as you said, the problem is we are already creating a lot of data. We're just failing to make sense of it. And so I wanted to switch to the sense-making side and try to figure out if we are generating so much data, and a lot of it is obviously good, how come when I open my Google News app in the morning, I see articles with titles like "Stop what you're doing and watch this elephant play with bubbles"? Right? Clearly, that's CNN, by the way. I'm not making
it
up.
God.
Clearly something has gone wrong. And this transition from generating the data to what we end up consuming.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to help bridge the gap. Because otherwise, I think if people keep getting bad inputs, then it doesn't matter how great their brain works, they're going to generate bad outputs in the world.
That's true. And that's the same with any AI project. You know, it's all about the data. And so in a way, you're comparing humans to what we do every day with AI, which is you've got to get the right data for you to have the right outputs. And if you've got the junk data coming in, junk outputs going out, in AI, and the same in humans, because our brain's consuming it and then coming out with stuff. So interesting.
Yeah, you could say we are the original AI in that sense.
We are. But we're the I. We're not the artificial.
You never know.
Yes, I did actually see an amazing interview, and I've been trying to get him on my podcast, with this MIT professor. And he is a professor in video games. And someone said, you know, would it be theoretically possible for us to be actually like in the Matrix and in someone else's video game? And he said, yes, actually, we could be just a video game for future humans or of the future, but you would need a big bang to power it. And then I thought, but we had a big bang. But anyway, I digress. I love that statement you made recently about biggest problem facing humanity is that we are consuming so much junk information, and that your mission is to get rid of junk information. It's quite a lofty goal. How would you define junk, and how is it different from fake news and other misinformation?
So I think fake news and misinformation is an ill-defined term to begin with, right? So I would look at disinformation as something that is well-defined. It's intentional. Somebody put effort into creating something fake in the world.
Yeah.
Fake news is, again, it's just what people label stuff they don't like. So I'm not even sure how to approach the definition of that, except when it applies to real disinformation. The way that I tend to look at it is for the most part, most content on the internet and elsewhere is created to make money. It's not created just because somebody wanted to create content, right?
Yeah.
Content on the internet is monetized using advertising. Advertising pays per click or per view. So generally speaking, we've had at least 20 years of all content drifting towards clickbait because that's what pays. So the content that is better at generating money wins over time.
Yeah.
So most of what we see around us is closer to the elephants playing with bubbles than to the intentional Russian propaganda that we are all discussing, right? The propaganda exists, the disinformation exists, the obvious conspiracy theories, things like that, they all exist. But I don't think we have more of them than we used to before. Okay. We have more of the nonsensical clickbait things that there's that don't represent what they appear to be, right? So headline says one thing, you click on it, turns out to be something completely different.
Yeah.
So I think you have to have a multifaceted definition of junk and just start with thinking, what are all the obviously bad traits that content can have?
Yeah.
And then our approach to it was we created a separate AI filter for each one, trying to narrow down the scope of each filter until people mostly agree with the outputs. Because if you say fake news detector, people can argue about whether it detects correctly or not.
Yeah.
But if you say clickbait detector, okay, now most people can actually agree on each headline, whether it's clickbait or not.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to narrow down the scope of each model until most people intuitively agree with the outputs, but then create as many of those as possible. Right now we have a little more than 20.
Okay. And so you're using AI to really distinguish between what's good content and actually valuable content and what is junk.
Yeah. So mostly it's supervised training of transformer models, right? So we had a bunch of humans, or we had an existing academic data set of labeled articles with particular traits annotated. And then we train the model to be almost as good as a human, but more scalable.
Interesting. And then it surprises me that that elephant and bubbles example was CNN. I mean, that's kind of crazy. Do you think journalism is getting worse than it was before, or is it about the same?
I think journalists might be trying as hard as they used to before, but they can't fight the tide, right? There's still the pressure to make money. And so CNN or New York Times, they all have to compete with the BuzzFeeds of the world anyway.
Yeah.
And if they don't break a story first, they're not going to get the click.
Yeah.
So what happens is the standards for a story go down. And I'm not even talking about the elephants blowing bubbles. I'm talking about the stories that we read every day now with a single anonymous source. Being the source for the story. I think if you rewind 20 years, how many stories had a single anonymous source? Watergate, Pentagon Papers, that's about it. Right? It used to be basically breaking journalistic rules, right? To publish something with that standard. But now everybody does it because otherwise somebody else gets the clicks.
Yeah, absolutely. How did this happen? How did we get to this point in our evolution? You know, is it tech companies that are to blame, or where do you see the issue, how we got to this place?
I mean, it's certainly technology. I wouldn't say tech companies. Tech companies are also just trying to make money, right? In fact, we had the printing press. It was a fairly similar process. I wouldn't say that Gutenberg or one of those guys is to blame here, right? It's just you had a new process appear. And people weren't used to that process democratizing publishing to that extent, right? And so a bunch of bad books created a bunch of bad outcomes for the next 200 years.
Yeah.
We had witch hunts, we had inquisitions, we had 52 religious wars, right?
Yeah.
So we're in a similar process now, first with the internet, then with really effective advertising that gives immediate feedback to the advertiser that feeds back into changing the ad and the content itself.
Yeah.
This is something we never had before. So humanity hasn't quite adjusted to that level of granularity with advertising.
Yeah.
And now we're going to get AI on top of it. So in your introduction, you presented AI as a part of the problem. Not yet, but it will make the problem much worse.
Yes, because generative AI can create all sorts of hallucinations, as they call it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not just hallucinations, right? If you just think about what a human wants to do, let's say a human works for BuzzFeed or whatever comes after BuzzFeed now that it's dead, right? Until now, they could create maybe 10 articles per day. Now with ChatGPT, they can create 100, maybe 500 by the time they actually get better at prompt engineering, right?
Yeah.
And so the amount of junk generated, even without any hallucinations from ChatGPT itself, is going to be orders of magnitude larger. Now, when you add in hallucinations, and when you add in the feedback loop of the next version of ChatGPT training itself on the hallucinations of the previous version.
Yes. I didn't think of that. Yes, you're right, because everything that goes in is then used for the next one.
Yeah.
Huh. So that's amazing.
We're in for a lot of fun unless we learn how to filter this stuff.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, how can you fix it? I guess what you're doing is basically the first step in fixing this. It's creating a platform where AI is actually filtering it and identifying, which is what, of course, generative adversarial networks were originally trained to do. You know, they're creating fake data so the algorithm could look at the difference between the two.
Yeah. So in our case, the fake data is being created all the time, right?
So
you could think of this more as the virus antivirus analogy, right?
Yeah.
It's clear that the virus guys have had a head start for the past 20 years at least.
Yeah.
And now we're trying to create some sort of an antivirus to this, but there will be an arms race.
Yeah.
And so if you just apply the latest generative AI technology to all the content in the world, our filters will fail.
Yeah.
And so we have to learn and adjust to what journalists are actually using.
Yeah.
For now, they're mostly using the elephants blowing bubbles or the basic clickbait, right? But once they get to more elaborate schemes of, okay, please write this article in the style that scores high on other web.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Then we're going to need to come up with new filters that catch that specifically, right?
Yeah, that's true. Is there any historic parallels to what we're seeing now?
Well, I think I mentioned the printing press. That's probably the best one.
That's true, yeah.
Right? But if you think about any new kind of publishing technology or media technology, it always creates short-term transitions. And when I say short-term, it varies, right?
Yeah.
So the printing press, the transition period was at least 200 years.
Yeah.
From the 1430s until at least 1660s, roughly.
Yeah.
So 230 years of craziness.
Yeah. Right?
But then if you think about the radio, you could argue that it resulted in all the fascistic regimes all over Europe in the 1930s and 40s, right?
Yeah.
And so every new technology creates this odd transition period in which the quality of content changed, but people haven't adjusted yet. And people don't have the tools yet to try to make sense of this new avalanche of content going their way.
Yeah.
And so our goal, in some sense, can be phrased as, let's try to shorten the transition, because this time we have nukes, and so I'm not sure we want to go through 52 religious wars.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about future generations? You know, how do you think the trends will be different as we progress?
It's really hard to predict because the pace of change is so high,
fast.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm sure there will be more transitions. I want to be optimistic and think that we will get through this one without blowing ourselves up, right? That is my personal goal. But it's hard to tell how fast the next transition will come. So there is the chance of we just got adjusted to this one and the next one happens immediately thereafter, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know how to predict things into the future with potentially self-reinforcing trends like AI being in the mix. There is, I would say, both the optimistic and the pessimistic, depending on which industry you're from. But there is the scenario that the current paradigm of AI, of large language models, is actually not that far from basically hitting a ceiling and us needing a paradigm shift to get to the next thing. Sam Altman already started talking about it.
Well, yeah.
Perhaps it's not sustainable to have models with trillions of parameters, right? At some point, it hits a ceiling of, this is all the data we had. This is all the computation power we had.
Yeah.
What's the next thing?
Yeah.
But I don't know. Right now, the research is progressing so fast that it could be that the next paradigm shift will happen this year.
Yeah. It is. And I guess, what's the risk if we don't do anything?
Well, the risk is people consume information that is, how should I phrase this? That is less and less connected to reality.
Yeah.
And so their actions become farther and farther from the optimal actions in reality, right?
Yeah.
And again, then people start doing stupid things, but right now people are pretty powerful. Right. Mm-hmm. We are gods, but for the wisdom, to quote Eric Weinstein. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we have very very strong bonds. We know how to split atoms. We know how to print DNA. If the stuff we are consuming day in and day out is just nonsensical, mm-hmm. then some percentage of us are going to do really bad things with it.
Yeah, that's true.
So my goal is to try to improve the quality of information people consume, because hopefully it will improve the quality of actions they take.
Yes, exactly. And so AI fits in two places. One is what you're doing, which is using the AI to filter and so basically identify what's the junk and what's not the junk, and serve up the good stuff, the good information, the real information. But I guess in the future, as we touched on, generative AI could actually be generating a lot of the junk that is going online and in all these different websites, just because it can analyze, you know, what's getting a response and what isn't, and adapt really quickly to get bigger, more clickbait, basically, kind of responses.
I would say there is even a third element to this, which yeah. we're seeing now with AI being used for search engines. Mm. It could replace the model of search that we are used to, of just whenever you ask a query, you get a bunch of results and you have to pick which one to click on. It could be that this is going away.
Yes.
And if this goes away, then a lot of the websites that make their money off of traffic in the near future are going to get substantially less traffic, because people will just get their answer from the search engine and move on, right?
Yeah.
So it could be that we will have a larger and larger amount of generated content mm-hmm. chasing fewer and fewer clicks.
Yeah.
And how this will affect the ecosystem is really hard to predict, but it sounds a lot like a race to the bottom at some point.
Yeah. And a lot of my listeners are from the pharma industry. What do you think all of this could mean for the pharma industry?
I mean, it's obviously good to have AI to formulate the drugs, right? I'm sure that it makes the process somewhat cheaper, at least on the R&D side, but probably not on the regulatory side. On the other hand, if you have people who are really misinformed or who are just consuming random junk day in, day out, I don't know how easy it would be to actually tell them what they need to take, right? It could be that everybody will just show up at the doctor's office with saying, I have a migraine, can you give me foot cream? And and that's it, and you won't be able to convince them. So I don't know, it introduces some level of chaos into every knowledge-based system, unless we're able to regulate it somehow.
Yeah, that's an interesting concept, because we've seen that already with all sorts of things during COVID, with, you know, people going to the doctor wanting hydrochloroquine when it has nothing to do with, you know, helping them. So there was so much misinformation there around pharmaceuticals that, yeah, very interesting.
On the other hand, and I'm sure pharma guys will not like me saying this, but the US already has kind of an odd system with advertising for pharmaceuticals that empowers people to go to their doctors asking for a particular drug to begin with, right? So maybe it's slightly better if it's a drug that actually has something to do with the condition they have, but it's still a really odd system when the person shows up at the doctor's office and says, I just saw this advertising that told me, ask your doctor if this is good for you, right? It's not clear why that should be advertised to people to begin with. It actually creates weird incentives for the media itself, because a surprisingly large portion of the revenue comes from pharma.
Yeah.
Right. And so
at least the media, in the US.
At least, well, specifically in the US, right?
Yeah.
And so can the media then be trusted to even provide us with good information if they are kind of tilted to begin with? So it's an odd system where the information space is distorted by a lot of financial incentives that aren't aligned with information becoming better.
And so what do you think the biggest challenges that pharma will face in the coming few years because of all of this junk information that's out there?
I think we kind of outlined what those for the most part are. I think again, convincing people that they need to take what is actually good for them is going to become harder and harder. At the same time, I don't know if the model of pharma today relies on being able to reach people through the big media outlets, then maybe pharma will need to rethink it, because I don't know how much longevity that model has. All those big media companies are decaying.
I think pharma has to change their model for so many reasons, actually. Certainly not least to do with the fact that AI is now meaning that we can predict cancer before someone has symptoms, you know, with companies like Grail, and that, you know, we have value-based pricing, and there's a whole heap of different things going on in the environment that to me mean we need to change the model. But yeah, that's yet another one that we could add onto the list of why they need to change the model.
Yeah, the other one is, and this is perhaps the more hopeful note, it's possible that the same people who don't trust other humans will actually trust AI more when it tells them, nah, you don't need to take this cocktail of drugs, you just need to lose weight. Yeah. Right? And so today we can't really deliver that message to people, because if a human tells you that you just need to lose weight and everything will become better, you dismiss them and just go take some drugs to maintain your condition. Mm. Right? But maybe if the smartest computer ever created tells you that, no, yeah, this is what you need to do, you just need to lose weight, and these 12 different symptoms will go away, maybe humans will trust that more.
That's an interesting point. I can think of two examples in my life. A friend of mine told one of his patients, so he was a doctor who told one of his patients that they needed to lose weight because they had huge amount of pressure on their knee joints and they would need knee surgery, but they needed to lose weight, and then they wouldn't need the surgery if they didn't have that pressure. And they were so insulted and so angry. They complained to the hospital. They complained all over the place that, you know, how rude and insulting, when it was just a medical fact. So sometimes that kind of news is maybe better from a machine. And there was another programmer that I had many years ago, and we were doing a project for Pfizer on cardiovascular risk. And we created this program that people could just put in their information and see what the risks for their cardiovascular were. And the programmer that was working on this was very, very obese. And he, while doing this project, he tested the system on himself by putting all his factors in. And he was so shocked at what the risks were to him of being the weight he was. And then every time I had a meeting with him after that, it was like a shrinking man. He suddenly became slimmer and slimmer and slimmer. And it really did have a huge impact, just, you know, having that algorithm showing him what could happen. So yeah, it's a very interesting area.
But I can say from my sort of family example, right? My parents moved to the US fairly recently. Mm. And every time they go to the doctor, then the doctor prescribes some new cocktail of drugs to them. And I'm looking at what the doctor prescribed, and I'm thinking, at no point did the doctor actually mention that, you know, if you lose 20 pounds, you won't need this thing.
Yeah.
Right. And it's not like it's a solution to everything, but it is a solution to a lot of the diseases that older folks have in this country. And so it's odd to me that doctors don't just go that route. They go directly to, well, here's another three things that you can add that you must take daily to survive. Right. Yeah. Where it would be much better to just become slightly healthier to begin with. And then you're not surviving. You're actually able to do stuff.
Yeah, depending on the conditions, but yeah, absolutely. Wow, so interesting. So how do people find you and Otherweb?
So otherweb.com is the website. Mm-hmm. Most people use us through the Android and iOS apps. They're also called Otherweb on both Google Play and the App Store. And we even have a newsletter you can sign up to if you're the kind of person who just wants 10 articles a day and you don't want to browse or have customized feeds or anything like that.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much how people mostly use us. Now, I should mention that for the most part, most of our users right now use us primarily as a news aggregator, but we're adding more and more stuff that goes well beyond news, including research studies where if you're following pharma, it could be a good way to follow it. And we're trying to also integrate the information between the different sources so that you're reading a news article, let's say, you see the name of a condition you don't know or the name of a drug you've never encountered before, you just highlight it and search research studies with one thing. Because we think that people might want to dive deeper as opposed to just skimming flatly across a bunch of articles.
Yeah.
So that's the general approach. We'll see how we adjust in the future, especially with the amount of content multiplying with AI.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much. So interesting. And good luck with it, because I really like what you're doing there and using AI for good, for a very good use case there. So thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.